Welcome, everyone, to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are in paper 72, section 5, which is old single column, page 813. All right, we're into this paper, most interesting paper of government on a neighboring planet, in a little ways. Recall that back in section 2, they pointed out that they had divided the various aspects of their society into three major subsets. Parental home subset, an educational subset, and an industrial subset. So we went through the first two, and so now we're ready to do the third, the industrial component. And I don't think we need to do too much other than that in the way of introduction, except just it's important every time to remind yourself, if you've read this paper many times, your challenge is to try to engage it in a way you maybe haven't engaged it before. Less about the facts on that other planet first, and more on what truths are flowing through those facts, independent of what planet we're talking about. Because obviously, it's the elements that are independent of the planet that would be useful to us. It isn't just, you know, they aren't giving us this just so that we can satisfy our curiosity about how someone else might set up their legislative branch, you know, or something. They only got permission to do this because it goes well beyond that. Because there's very, very relevant truths that are in play that those people reflected upon and constructed a system, the details of which are around the same thread of truth that we want to wrap our details around. They picked a people that are close enough that the same basic truths of the cosmos are present there as are here. You know, if you think in terms of kind of a downstepping of truth to meet some of the details, truth isn't just some totally overarching monolithic thing. It has some downstepping specificity, just like fact and goodness. So that's what, you know, that's what we're always striving for. It's always fun to kind of think about just immediate factual details, but we're trying to see how it shines a light on why there's an emergency on this planet, how their example can help us to clear away some of the fog of our specific details, you know, and see through those details. You know, if we can't do it here, it's like, well, maybe if we shift you over there, can you go through their details and get to the truth? Because maybe you'll take their details less ideologically, right? You won't be so blinded, and you can get through to the truth. All right, let's see what they have to say.
Section 5, Industrial Organization. The industrial situation among this people is far from their ideals. Capital and labor still have their troubles, but both are becoming adjusted to the plan of sincere cooperation. On this unique continent, the workers are increasingly becoming shareholders in all industrial concerns. Every intelligent laborer is slowly becoming a small capitalist.
Okay, so you see that definitely they're going to be talking about things in this area that are kind of hot off the presses. They've been They've been working on all these different elements of their system, and some of those elements fell into place, with less ado than others. Some of these things, we all know how complicated it is, between labor and management, as we often say, or however you want to express those tensions in business. But again, you see they very much, have reflected and discovered ideals that are relevant to this particular area and are striving to construct ideas and to control themselves in such a way that the material doings are directed towards those spiritual ideals. Spiritual ideals and industry, well, remember, there's humans involved. I mean, if nothing else, right, you're trying to set up your industrial ideas, remembering that we're all created equal. Right? That's an ideal. Right? That spiritually, we're equal. You don't want to forget that, right? That at the in the highest sense of setting up a system, everyone is loved equally by God, and no one is lesser in the eyes of God, and hence you can just de facto treat them in a lesser mode in your industrial construct. Okay. But they're going to be materially different, intellectually different. You can take all of that into account. But just a cursory reflection, reminding yourself that the humans are always involved. So ideals are always involved. Now, you notice that that self-control thing, right? They're getting themselves under control as individuals, sincere cooperation, loyal, humble, sincere. Right? It's a favorable condition for this system to grow to better and better states, more and more attuned to the ideals. So they're supplying the favorable conditions. They're letting the evolutionary process play out. They're stepping in when they feel they have the requisite wisdom. If not, they'll let it evolve a little bit more until it becomes clear. Okay, but in terms of a specific detail, you see at the end there, and there's certainly people today that recognize that idea of having employees be shareholders, right? Not just the handful of the aristocracy in the business, being shareholders. Some of these things, you go, well, okay, we basically have that. It's like, well, but how universally have we recognized that? The very fact that they've put that comment in here is challenging us to reflect more on the potential universality of such a thought, not just in some areas. But and maybe not literally, you have 150 shares of quote unquote stock. I mean, it doesn't have to be a shareholder merely in that sense, but in other ways, where you aren't just one of Henry Ford's interchangeable parts, in the assembly line. But again, see, treating people as humans.
So experientially. Yeah. The truth behind that is that really works.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when Mo and I did Celestial Seasoning, we read this mm-hmm. in the early 70s,
yeah.
and we started a plan for all the employees to get stock. And before they had stock, they really didn't pay attention to a lot of little things. As soon as they had even the teeniest bit, which means I'm now an owner, it changed their whole outlook on how they felt about coming to work.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an interesting experience when you do that, how it seems to make a real difference in people's attitude.
Yeah, yeah. And again, we have to take into account just the way we are naturally as material creatures. You know, a few of us can take care of a rented home as well as we do a home that we own, but most will only take care of it if they actually own it. And that's just the way it is. It's like the profit motive thing, like we talked about. I mean, you have to construct things based upon the facts of the way we are, not the way we'll be when we're deep in light and life. So get people, to feel a sense of ownership and they transfer their sense of self to those material doings. They do to that as they would do to themselves, right? It's extending them out into the material system.
And back to that example, which is interesting, and that is it's not just ownership, because there's a lot of landlords that own a home and they don't pay a lot of attention to
it. Sure, sure.
Or people who own stock in something but don't actually have any, don't work there or don't live there, who don't really pay much attention to the actual, thing they own stock in or the home that they own. So there's something more than just the ownership.
I mean, I agree. There has to be, it has to go beyond just the mechanical aspects of it or the literal, mere material facts of it.
Can't be two arms length.
There has to be some organicness to what's going on.
Yeah. Well, the same thing in your own church. Yeah. Or in your own whatever you do, social thing. If you're just a member but don't participate, it doesn't have the same effect.
Yeah.
It's kind of like life.
You have something, Gene?
There's a common problem when people go to try to achieve their ideals, and it's a real big temptation to see this ideal, and they see the people, and they can't seem to make the connection between the two. So they, the problem is people. People are made wrong.
Yeah, right.
People need to change so that they can fit the ideal. And
it's a guarantee.
It's damning people for... Actually, it's damning the Creator for making us the way we are, because he did a bad job of it.
Right, obviously, he messed up here. See, again, if that sort of mentality is in play, it's proof that these aren't true ideals that we're talking about. It's material idealism. It's false idealism. Right? There's no tension between how we are imperfect materially, if you will, and spiritual ideals. There's a tension between how we are materially and some false material idealism, right? Right. I mean, why, like the Revelers point out, why is there tend to be a tension between religion and science? Well, because religion isn't genuinely religion. It's a whole bunch of material notions and doings, right? And so it's butting heads with the guys that are studying matter, right? If you actually had, a religion of the spirit, something that was tied to spirit, tied to eternity through spirit, instead of tied to time through matter, like science, right? There wouldn't be any tension. Right.
That's
so again, it's
these days about the world is flat, all coming from the Bible. Everybody's. That's a good example of how.
Just anything, anything. I mean, that's why I stressed that up front. When they said their ideals, I wanted to make sure you pause and didn't immediately think in your old wineskin, like we've all been trained to do. Oh yeah, there's some ideal arrangement of molecules that they're striving for, and they haven't gotten there yet. No, ideals is not about arrangements of molecules, right? Or a particular way that you do a physical process, that's ideas. Right? If you turn an idea into a quasi-ideal like that, That's called ideology. So again, to figure out exactly what they're, what they have in mind there, you need to challenge yourself to get out of the old wineskin and actually think, how does a spiritual ideal have anything to do with industry? Lots of so-called idealistic arrangements of molecules might have something to do with industry. So that's the challenge. Okay, anyway, let's keep going here.
Social antagonisms are lessening, and goodwill is growing apace. No grave economic problems have arisen out of the abolition of slavery over 100 years ago. Since this adjustment was effected gradually by the liberation of 2% each year, those slaves who satisfactorily passed mental, moral, and physical tests were granted citizenship. Many of these superior slaves were war captives or children of such captives. Some 50 years ago, they deported the last of their inferior slaves. And still more recently, they are addressing themselves to the task of reducing the numbers of their degenerate and vicious classes.
Okay, well, there's a steep upslope to the political incorrectness in that paragraph. Let's start at the beginning of the paragraph. social antagonisms are lessening. Okay, but basically why? And goodwill is growing apace. Again, remember, relators aren't just using the word growing there because, it sounded interesting in the sentence or something, right? It means that literally favorable conditions have been supplied and they are evolving into a state of better will towards one another, right? Goodwill among men evolves into existence. When they say, that goodwill is growing apace, it's not because someone came up with a clever law or regulation that they instituted and put them into a state of goodwill by fiat. Again, I stress that because there you've just gotten to why the book is in my lap again. We're trying to establish goodwill by laws and regulations and whatnot, and that actually makes things worse, so bad that a super universe mobilized to give us a revelation, right? It's that false attitude that we have that's produced the emergency. So the humility of just supplying the favorable conditions and letting things grow into a better state. Think about how much evolutionary consciousness is in the rest of the paragraph as well. Because the very next thing they bring up is slavery. Okay, and first of all, just factually, about how close these people are to us. Okay, so, think back to, 20s and 30s, 1920s and 1930s, and they say over 100 years ago. So in other words, that island continent is about synced up with Great Britain in abolishing slavery. And a little bit ahead of the United States abolishing slavery. Right? See, if it's over 100 years ago, say in 1935. Okay? So, close to us, but kind of right there with the leading edge of Western civilization. On this island continent, or on that neighboring planet, where everything definitively progressive is all in one nation, we have it spread out a little bit here, right? So that, Great Britain can be moving across the threshold, before the United States does, for instance.
Yeah, look how long it took them, like 2% a
year. Right, and I'm just going to bring that up. Okay, and that's the evolutionary part. So once they just give you those facts, right, that they don't stop there. They give you the thing that we thought about in the United States but didn't do. Right? Initially, there was a lot of people that thought, you can't just do this. you know, what do we want at the end of slavery? When do we want it now? They knew that, that you shouldn't do that, that there should be some long natural evolutionary process that's set up so that, you know, things could adapt and adjust. But no, right? We had too much spiritual consciousness already for our own good. And that all that wisdom was overruled, and we're just going to do it.
Plus, we had a war, and, too.
Well, yeah, but still,
wasn't
was, you know, when we did it by fiat, was everything rosy from that point on? No, we all know 100 years later, you're finally kind of getting adjusted to some of the things that, see, I mean, so, you know, it's obvious why they're telling you that. You know, they spread it out over 50 years. Okay? Because they knew it you needed to slowly measure this into the system and let the system adjust. It's going to cause all sorts of tensions. And, you know, the system needs time to adjust. So you do it one drop at a time. You don't just pour the whole bottle in.
Okay? And they're making an attempt to objectively examine each and every one.
Yeah, well, we're going to get to that next. Okay. Okay, just one step at a time, right? Okay, so, you know, that's evolutionary fact. Okay, we certainly could have done that, see, better. But it just reminds us, anything that we do, as the revelators stress, you need to do that slowly, gradually, like profit motive, right? Pointed out directly. Okay, and then it gets to a level of objectivity and definitiveness that it's just about impossible for us to muster anymore. We're so spiritually fuzzed out and wishy-washy. We can't act definitively hardly anymore. We can't even do war definitively anymore. And that means you're pretty fuzzed out. You know, look what they do. Those slaves who satisfactorily passed mental, moral, and physical tests. Okay, it's not just the genetics thing, which you know is in play, but the mentality, you know, predicated on that genetics, okay. But wow, right? Not just the quality of the animal origin creature, but how much they've taken delight in cultivating some human character. And if they haven't, it's thumbs down. Right? They didn't pass the moral test. You imagine us trying to get into that space. Oh, my goodness. As they pointed out, there's a lot of genetics to it. Not everyone that's a slave is, you know, like we assume they probably have secondary sangics, you know. So not all the slaves would be secondary sangics. Some of them are, you know, reasonable genetics, war captives, or the children, those captives, like they said. So, you know, that's allowing some of those slaves, once you take the shackles off, to kind of rise to their genetic potential a little bit. Yeah, but of course, again, that's getting pretty politically incorrect for this day and age. See, and then, you know, you know, if it took 50 years to finally get them all freed, and it was about 100 years ago when they started, you know, so some 50 years ago, like they say, you know, they basically have everyone processed and in the system, and it's like, okay, now, you know, let's separate the wheat from the chaff.
And okay, dump them on the other.
Yeah, and so we stole you from that continent. We're going to drop you back on that continent. Good luck. okay, that's getting pretty aggressive for our sensibilities these days, right? Because, we all know what kind of a Mad Max world it is off this island continent on that planet. Right, you're dumping them into a very harsh environment.
Well, they could have been attacking. They could have come over and attacked the continent if they're war captives.
Yeah, but I mean, the point was, it's most likely the ones that are very inferior are the ones that are, you know, were just captured. See, that's why they point out that the superior ones, you know, are often coming from the captured ones. Yeah, you know? So, you know, flip it around. So in other words, a lot of the inferiors are going to be the ones that were just, you know, they sent a ship over to so and so continent and. You know, just like we did back in the day, and rounded up a bunch of secondary sangiks and, you know, in chains and drug them home.
not a happy homecoming, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, who knows what kind of, you know, social tensions there would be. But, you know, they're just dumping them, deporting them. But that's being very magnanimous, right? You haven't gotten to the end of the paragraph yet, right? So once they've dealt with the slaves, right, now they're going to carefully start sorting through everyone. You know, and when they're talking about reducing the numbers of their degenerate, okay, see, not defective, you know, like say maybe just say feeble-minded, okay, but actually degenerate and vicious classes, you know, we'll get to that section in a little bit. That's execution, right? You know, this planet is, you know, the Revelators know how politically incorrect that would be to us. They even state that when they talk about those issues here in a few sections. It's like, okay, this is going to assault your sensibilities on Urantia. But, you know, these people are very no nonsense about this. Anyone that just is, there's just nothing you can do with them. You know, they're innately, genetically antisocial. Now, you can't even socialize them in that parallel society that they set up for the feeble-minded. Right. So just no muss, no fuss, they just kill them. Yeah, so it's, you know, you don't see it right away there, you know, but that's, you know, the other shoe will drop here in a few sections. So, but anyway, despite how severe it is to our sensibilities, The point is that they are, they're thinking very long term. They're thinking very big picture. They're not trying to live illusions. They know it doesn't matter how much they want that person's genetics to be different. It's not going to be different, right? You know, it's like us thinking there's some clever psychological process that we can put someone through that's going to fix them. Well, some, but what about the, you know, no, I mean, no chemical, no drug, right, and no, you know, process of some sort, some regimen is going to change DNA. DNA is DNA. And see, they just, you know, and once they've gotten to the point where they think that's the deal, I mean, if anything, they're saying, well, you know, we really hate all those people on the other continents, but not that much to dump these degenerate, vicious ones on them. You know, see, they do actually know love. They aren't consumed by hate to where they'll throw their vicious classes on the other people so they don't have to use guns against them. They can just sick, vicious individuals on them. You know, no, they just put the whole globe out of the misery of them and just get rid of them.
There's two things here. One is we have a tendency to compare them with our country, the United States, which basically 500 years ago didn't even exist. These guys have been obviously on this island continent for a lot longer than that.
Yep.
And our country is all people coming from all over the place.
Right.
Whereas maybe comparing it to other countries in the world where they've been around for a long period of time and how they also have the same problems we do, I'm sure, you know, something different than, because we have a tendency to want to think about how it would work to correct our situation. And in fact, you know, when you look at all the people that have come here from, you know, all different parts of the world into different parts of the country, you know, and including the slaves that we brought in from wherever we brought them in, you know, a lot of them were, the Chinese were slaves for quite a bit of time.
Sure.
You know, the Africans were slaves, and a lot of people were slaves from all over. So it's a little bit different situation, as you say, in terms of trying to compare the facts of how you deal with something.
Right.
So my question here is that what do you see as the underlying truth in this particular aspect of cleaning house or whatever it is? In other words, as far as it pertains to us in this revelation.
Well, I mean, I mentioned one that, you know, the basic, you need to think of everything in evolutionary terms, which it's just about impossible for any of us to do that in any area. I mean, just, you know, think about any subject that we're talking about these days and look for someone who's suggesting an evolutionary step about it, you know, instead of just some material idealistic fiat, you know, solution. And then the other is, you know, one must face facts and adjust them to ideals in order to achieve wisdom. Right? There's a truth flowing through that sentence, right, that's flowing through this paragraph. Right? Genetic facts. Right? You have to clear your head of any illusions that somehow a lot of the issues on the planet are not genetic and genetically based, right? I mean, basically every time the revelation is severe in our eyes, right, that's the bottom line of their severity. It's people. It's a genetic issue. No amount of redistribution of wealth is going to solve the poverty issue, right? They told us a little, you know, here just recently. And you go, why not? I can imagine it. No, it's a genetic issue, right? You redistribute things, and it regenerates. The poverty regenerates. You can't eliminate it by fiat. It has a genetic source. You know, and so you have to keep that in mind. You have to think long term. That, you know, we don't have to kill anyone necessarily. But we do have to face genetic facts where there's going to be poor people, and so you have to have a system that takes that into account, encourages them to work to the best of their abilities, to contribute to society to the best of their abilities, you know, and what have you. Don't just, you know, give up on them, support them, and you know, those sorts of things.
You
had one more thing, and then we'll get to you.
Yeah. And that is the whole thing, which you've mentioned a few times, mm-hmm. and genetic research, genetic understanding. And so as we begin to, you know, because a lot of people are afraid of that, obviously, from the Hitler thing and everything, mm-hmm. you know, the way to correct genetics is to kill all your futures, so
right.
to speak,
right.
as opposed to the opposite, the more positive way is to be able to find out what it is genetically mm-hmm. that can be improved, mm-hmm. you know, and begin to build that up.
And again, remember, the positive mode of genetic engineering, we're not going to get, you know, to any great success in that mode until we have someone to help us, to instruct us. You know, we're supposed to have a material son to instruct us, you know, in the genetic details, you know, exactly what arrangements of molecules lead to the adjuvants seeding better upon that genetic foundation. I mean, that's why the revelators don't anywhere suggest that we try to really push forward with genetic engineering and start modifying our DNA, right? They just say, okay, you know,
you say we should cherish those things that we, you know, the genetically stocks that are, or whatever.
Right, but they, you know, what they do tell you is you can at least look at your most markedly unfit, etc., and not let them procreate.
And then the opposite.
Okay, I mean that doesn't require any sophisticated genetic engineering knowledge, right?
But they also said to, I don't know if cherish is the wrong word, but guard, you know, the ones that are
again the this you know? Right again because everything's a bell curve. You know, you know, the main potential of the human race is in the center of the bell curve. It's not in either tail. Yeah, you got some.
Yeah, what it does require though is a philosophical change of mind. Mm-hmm. Or change of heart, however you want to look at it. But because right now, it's assumed that people have a right to procreate.
Right.
That needs to go by the wayside. That needs to go by the boards. Mm-hmm. It should be a privilege to procreate. Society needs to get a handle on it, a hold of it, mm-hmm. and not leave it to every individual.
Right. just some the randomness of the sex impulse.
Yeah. I mean, I bridle at the thought myself.
Mm, right, right.
but it doesn't matter.
Mm. Yeah, and I was going to bring up basically the underlying element to that point. You know, what's one of the reasons why the people on this island continent have been so successful in kind of clearing the fog out of their minds, being able to see things clearly and can focus? Because there's no question in anyone's mind that there's only one hope for that world. It's not any other continent. It's not the peoples on any other continent. There is only one place that embodies the potential for light and life on that planet, right? And it's their continent. Now, and so they're guarding, right? I mean, they're conserving the higher spiritual types, quote unquote. They know they're doing it there. They know that if they don't do it, the light goes out. See, and that gets you, it's like, wait a minute, that sounds a little bit, yeah, like what Abraham Lincoln said in the end of the Gettysburg Address. Yeah, I mean, see, there's another reason why they can tell us what, you know, about this island continent. It embodies the truth of the United States, the truth that Lincoln spoke to in the Gettysburg Address. Right? We need to get more clear on this. We can't think that, well, you know, we can just do whatever here and someone else on the planet will pick up the pieces. No. Right? Just like the island continent is a spear point of the genetics on that planet. Right?
What did Lincoln say at the end of the Gettysburg Address?
If we don't get ourselves squared away here, you know, government of the people and by the people and for the people will perish from the earth.
Right? Okay, I remember that
one. Yeah, they'll perish from the earth. We've got to, you know, get clear on that again. I mean, that fundamental recognition that we aren't just any old country, right? And it's not because we think we're the chosen people, right? You know, how we've denigrated that thought. No, we recognize that this is the leading edge of civilization. You know, it's been moving around, right? It started, you know, in the Mesopotamia and Caspian Sea area, right? It moved over to Greece and Rome and northern, you know, Europe, and, you know, and this is the spear point of the evolutionary process. And if it goes dark here, it's very problematic. You know, and basically the revelers telling this, you know, they seem to be suggesting that it's just as problematic as if this island continent ceased to exist on that world. You can imagine the planetary administrators on that world, you know, they're trying to conserve the higher spiritual types too. You know, and by spiritual types, you know, we mean Holy Spirit. You know, the more human individuals on that world, just like they, you know, asked for permission on this world to do that. Because if you can't make something from nothing, yeah. Right? You have to maintain enough of that basic genetic foundation of the biologic uplift. If you could somehow make a world enlightened life without biologic uplifters, there wouldn't be biologic uplifters. It's just the fact of it. Right? I mean, they don't do biologic uplifters just, you know, because they want to speed up the process because they're impatient. You know, what do we want light in life? When do we want it now? You know, so let's send biologic uplifters. No, I mean, if it could happen just by a slow evolutionary process, then there wouldn't be biologic uplifters. So they're indispensable. You know, and we have to remember that. So we need to. We have a deep responsibility to take a hold of ourselves and conduct ourselves in a human manner. I mean, the future is in the hands of a genetic few. You don't see a lot of people coming out of the darkness and writing a document that sounds like the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution of the United States. It's just not happening everywhere on the planet. You know? Doesn't look too hopeful that Russia or China will properly take our place if we drop the ball. They don't seem to be really that interested in advancing democracy. They seem to kind of like an authoritarian hand. So we got to keep that in mind. And so that's, you know, it's that general thing that's flowing through this whole paper of recognizing the responsibility that Abraham Lincoln tried to remind us, you know, that we have to do this, people. It is our job on this world to be the light shining in the darkness, to be the city on the hill, right? That's our job. Yeah, it can't be all about you and self-gratification, right? So now back to, you know, notice there's a large paragraph break there. So you take a deep breath. It's like, okay, let's just kind of get back to the basics of the industrial organization on this planet.
These people have recently developed new techniques for the adjustment of industrial misunderstandings and for the correction of economic abuses, which are marked improvements over their older methods of settling such problems. Violence has been outlawed as a procedure in adjusting either personal or industrial differences. Wages, profits, and other economic problems are not rigidly regulated, but they are in general controlled by the industrial legislatures, while all disputes arising out of industry are passed upon by the industrial courts.
There you see it at the end. Remember, each of these subsets of their society has all three branches, legislative, executive, and judicial. Just some basics there. So basically, whenever there was any tension, they just killed each other until the tension went away. That was their old method. But violence has been outlawed as a procedure for handling disputes between labor and management. We all know, you go back a little ways, and there was a lot of violence right on this planet as we try to push forward in this in that evolutionary process. We don't want to fall back to that. Right, that's the natural thing. That violence is natural. Because you have more spiritual consciousness now, so that you're more impatient now, and you just can't wait for evolution to grow a better industrial organization, right, you're going to decide that violence is the only option here. Right, there need to be torches and pitchforks at the door of corporate headquarters. Right? We all know, right, how you can see slipping back into that. If the World Trade Organization meets, there's always torches and pitchforks. Right? People who, see that organization as a negative actuality rather than a positive potentiality. And they want it to be a positive actuality now. They got frustrated a long time ago, and so now they think the only solution is just kill everyone. Burn all the buildings, all the businesses down, and kill all the people, right, that are in charge of them. Right, we've got a lot of anarchistic tendencies like that on the planet. And it's not always so egregious like that, but you can see it just in, there's a building impatience, right? You can't let the minimum wage evolve to higher levels in some natural, stable way, right? You're going to just skip over all evolutionary steps and go from $1 an hour to $50 an hour tomorrow. Right, and look at how they even mentioned that. Right, wages, profits, and other economic problems are not rigidly regulated. Right? They know it's an evolutionary process. You need to set up some basic boundaries, right, that acknowledge the fact that there's lots of selfish individuals and you can't let them run off on endless tangents and stuff. Right? You put in some boundaries, right? But you basically have to let it evolve. You can't institute light and life by fiat. You can't get to those ideals that they envision by some fiat, you know, enactment. They know that. You can see it just over and over and over again. I mean, that's one of the biggest truths that's flowing through the entire Revelation. Everything's an evolutionary process, people. You know, and the more immaturely spiritually conscious we become, the more we can't see that. The more we refuse to see that. The more we will not see that. And we become those who are, you know, will not see, that are so blind. That leads to an emergency situation, right? It's not the natural blindness that is an emergency. It's the willful blindness that's an emergency, right? And you've got to be, you know, spiritual enough to be willfully blind, right? Humans basically haven't been spiritually enough to be that very globally, destructively, willfully blind until recent decades. That's the emergency. Okay, so I can just, you know, I don't want to just, you know, pound this over and over again, but it's just, it's always there. You can see it. That's the one of the basic truths that's flowing through just about every paragraph here. Evolution. You got to think in terms of evolution. You need to grab a hold of the reins. Well, maybe first you need to put a bridle on your spiritual consciousness so that it has reins, and then you need to pull back on the reins. Right? You can't let it run moderated, ungoverned. What's the govern? You know, the foundation of, you know, of the governing of that. Which adjutant is the governor amongst the adjutants? The seventh adjutant, yeah, right? You need to respond to your philosophic impulse, not just your religious impulse. You need to bring in the governor over the religious impulse. The religious impulse is a beginning of something, not the end of something. And that, if you think of it as an end of something, that's what produces an emergency, an ungoverned, right, religious-like energy. That's fanaticism. Okay. So they have this whole complicated three-branch system for a reason, you know, because you have it's a complicated system that it's worthy of having this specific three branches just for it, a legislature just for it, you know, with different houses in the legislature, no less, right? And you know, and courts and an executive, so that you can begin to guide this with you know, with a specialized wisdom, guide this area of their society. All right, you know, read the both the preface of the paragraph and the three items there too.
The industrial courts are only 30 years old, but are functioning very satisfactorily. The most recent development provides that hereafter the industrial courts shall recognize legal compensation as falling in three divisions. 1, legal rates of interest on invested capital. 2, reasonable salary for skill employed in industrial operation. 3, fair and equitable wages for labor.
Okay, so in item 1, you can see, you know, some of that. It's not rigidly regulated, but it's obviously regulated interest rates. Right? There are legal rates of interest. There's some level beyond which is usury to them. Right? So just a simple example. You know, what it is, you know, who knows? That's not important. Exactly what the, you know, the interest rate is. But just that idea of We've talked about that before, times when the relators are saying, you remember that usury thing that you kind of totally forgotten about? You don't want to be primitive about it, but you want to think about that a little bit. It's getting a little out of hand in some areas. You know, as soon as you discovered compound interest, it seemed like a bottomless pit of delight, that you could draw from as a capitalist. And again, you see, only 30 years old. Right? So again, how fresh off the presses some of this is. It is kind of interesting to just notice how they've boiled it down to a very clean system. Right? There aren't all, we have just almost endless proliferation of different avenues of income. In our ever more complex society. It's like they've got just, you've had invested capital, you have, salaried workers and then people making hourly wages. All right, and that's it. And again, you can see the regulation, the gentle boundary conditions they set up. There's something that's called reasonable salary. Right? Maybe $500 million a year is not a reasonable salary. or whatever. $500 a year is not a reasonable salary. Right? What are the boundary conditions? Instead of just letting it be whatever, they're not saying the salary must be exactly this or but they're putting some boundary conditions above and below which is unreasonable. It doesn't say rational, it says reasonable. It's not merely rational, it's reasonable. And it means there's some objective aspect to it. It's reasoned into conformity with a system.
But remember, they don't have taxes.
Right. There's all these things. See, that's what I mean. It's relative. Reasonableness is relative to the system. Our reasonable will be different than their reasonable. But reasonable it should be. We need to, we can't pretend that you shouldn't be trying to figure out what's reasonable. We can't say, we have a right. Everyone has a right to make whatever they can squeeze out of the system. That may not be the wisest thought. Especially when people are still, when you're in the material comfort here and there's a lot of greed still. That might not be the wisest thought. And then notice the other thing, fair and equitable wages for labor. Fair and equitable. And equitable is the foundation word. Okay, so in other words, they look at the basic hierarchy or structure of it and figure out what the wages for this kind of labor should be or what the wages for this kind of, this general type of individual should be or whatever. Right? And then when you're within one of those groups in this equitable system, like a simple thing about fairness, both the men and the women say that are in that group should be getting the same. Right? It should be fair. That would be a simple way of thinking about the fairness. So you don't see. So first, you break it up into groups. You don't do some sort of global, false spiritual consciousness fairness notion, right? Where you don't take into account any of the individuality details. First, you take care of all the individuality, but then once you have one of those individuated subsets in the system, it needs to be fair within that space. But fairness is relative to that group, or this group, or that other group. So that's the idea there. I think that's probably enough for the moment. Obviously, things like that is starting to really hint at kind of the science of it, and you can start really thinking about it. It's like, how would we precisely implement things? But definitely one of the things to notice is they're laying down some simplicity. They don't want it to just be open-ended so that you can just have endless avenues of you can get income this way and that way and this way. You know, I mean, why is our tax code, you know, thousands of pages long? Because there's almost an infinite number of income modes, right? And they're trying to dot the I's and cross the T's on every one of them in our ridiculously complex system.
You start to get a sense as you get more familiar with quality of thinking that went into all of their structures.
Yeah.
That they probably have something that's pretty excellent, and it's not hard to be okay with it because you can, you know, this populace, you know, they embrace the fine-tuned it all is.
Yep.
Really, they just really solidifies their foundational trust levels.
And the integrity of their reflective thinking, there's no reason why we couldn't kind of start with, like, well, what if we, you know, thought of just kind of copying their system? Okay, so you sort of lay that out in front of you as sort of the starting point, and then you modify it. You know, it seems like, you know, not only are they trying to give us the truth, but they're trying to give us a factual starting point. It's like, well, start with this and try rearranging that a little bit rather than just, you know, erasing everything. And it's like, well, I don't know, what do we start? You know, should we have 12 branches of government? Should we have 16 houses in, you know, in the legislature? Right. I mean, you know, if you just let it, you know, start with totally blank slate, you know.
You know, I've always had a tendency to take some of these things with a grain of salt and maybe not as seriously as I should, because I recognize, well, that we could never do it that way here.
Mm-hmm.
But that can still be true, but the things that need to be done are still the same things.
Yeah.
That's what you were bringing up.
Yeah. And, you know, in some cases, the way they figured out to do it might not be too far from the way that would be the best here, at least to start with. Right? So you could kind of, you know, base your starting point on them. Right? You don't have, like I said, you don't have to just say, well, none of the facts are going to be specifically to us. And, you know, I just need to focus on the truth. Right? You know, it doesn't have to be one or the other. Okay, and then they give a little fascinating little follow-on to this little system they've set up.
These shall first be met in accordance with contract, or in the face of decreased earnings, they shall share proportionately in transient reduction. And thereafter, all earnings in excess of these fixed charges shall be regarded as dividends and shall be prorated to all three divisions, capital, skill, and labor.
So right there you can see, you know, like they mentioned earlier, they've had a lot of problems in this area, a lot of killing because of these sorts of tensions. And so you can see the wisdom. It's like, okay, let's kind of just make it very mechanical in a lot of ways, right? Where there isn't, it's like, well, should we do this with the extra earnings or should we do that? It's like, no, you have to do this because that's the way it's just legally set up. Okay? So if things go down, you can modify the initial contracted levels, but it's all just done proportionally, right? You know, if the amount that's given to you in interest on your invested capital, you know, is 0.01% of the total, you know, that the company's laying out, that's, you know, that's your percentage in the whole, and whether it goes down or up, right? You have your proportion in the system. And so they're just you can see they're just trying to keep it very simple. There's no arguments. It's like, well, you know, I was putting more effort in, you know, in the last 3 months, and, you know, I should get a little bit more dividend than Bob did, you know. You know, everyone just is bought into it, just being a clean mathematical sort of issue. And so even if we didn't do that, you can see the wisdom of that. It's like, well, you know, maybe some things should be set up so that there just isn't room for disagreement and potential violent, you know, argument about things. Yeah. And then when you see that, it feeds back. It's like, oh, I can see why it would be handy to keep it simple, not have all kinds of different modes of income. And it'll just be too complicated. So you keep it really clean. And then everything can be, you know, modified with the ebbs and flows of their earnings. All right. Anything else on that? Okay. Let's keep going.
Every 10 years, the regional executives adjust and decree the lawful hours of daily gainful toil. Industry now operates on a 5-day week, working 4 and playing 1. These people labor 6 hours each working day and, like students, 9 months in the year of 10. Vacation is usually spent in travel, and new methods of transportation having been so recently developed, the whole nation is travel bent. The climate favors travel about 8 months in the year, and they are making the most of their opportunities.
Okay, so notice the interesting thing at the beginning. They have a very dynamic, evolving system where every 10 years they do a reassessment. They step back. You know, again, the specifics are what, you know, we would decide is best for us, but that thought of, you know, of not being so kind of just existential about, you know, how long the workday is. You know, or see, like in a bigger sense, be thinking about setting up a system that is going to be so dynamic and evolving that you perforce must reassess it. You know, and not letting our spiritual consciousness, be unbalanced and lead to highly existentialized thought about, like, the length of the workday. So a number of ways you can approach that to think about what's going on there in their minds. You remember when they mentioned the 5-day week? You know, industry now operates. So, you know, that does lead to all of this, 10-fold divisioning of things that we, you know, see, apparently they set it up at the same time, you know. You know, who knows what their week was before they changed it to a 5-day week. Again, maybe it's some easy division of their lunar cycle if they have a moon. You know, maybe it was similar to ours, you know, and maybe it was 9 days or something, right? You see that. And you notice that they're getting pretty efficient, you know, if they're just working 6 hours. Or you can also think about it, they know there's more to life than just working, right? And they need time to do other things. We'll see an example here shortly, right? And by the way, I mean, you know, they don't explain how many hours there are in a day, so, I mean, obviously what they're doing there is just using our concept of a 24-hour day. In other words, they're, you know, what they're telling you is they only work for a quarter of the day. Three quarters of the day is for other stuff. Okay? That's the point of that statement.
It's amazing that this is their trouble area. That just seems so put together. This is where they're having trouble.
Mm-hmm. Like they mentioned there, with the education, you've got this 10-month year and 9 months. You know, you're your nose to the grindstone, and then a month of vacation, and this whole issue of exactly how do they line up with us temporally? You know, we saw at the beginning of the section that they were a little ahead of us in the United States in getting rid of slavery, but about the same as the British Empire. Here, you can see, yeah, they're developing cars, for instance, about the exact same time we were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Trading in their fan doors.
Yeah, and we all know, you know, we did the same thing. Boy, once you had cars, you know, everyone was, I mean, once you had a Model T, you know, everyone was just going off in the, you know, there's no roads. Everyone is just taking their Model T out into the prairie, you know. Wherever they can drive it, yeah. Go exploring. Yeah, so they've got the same thing happening. So that it's that comment, you know, about that kind of that basic technology evolution. Okay, so if they're basically getting cars the same time we are, what's happened to us since we got cars at the beginning of the 20th century? You know, a few decades go by and we have nuclear weapons and yeah. So you can think about what's happened in the last 100 years on that world. It's gone from a place that the island continent was pretty isolated because transportation was still sailing ships. Right, to now, right, you've got high, you know, you've got airplanes, you've got intercontinental ballistic missiles. You know, one can only hope that maybe the other continents are so benighted, but you know, even North Korea is, yeah. Right, on this planet is getting so. You know, it's probably gotten very interesting for those people. They aren't as isolated as they used to be. Who knows what they've had to endure? Because all those other countries, just that's all they dedicate every day of their life to try to figure out how they can kill everyone on the island continent. That's what the whole world lives for. You know, the rest of that world lives for. Yeah. So if they've gotten wind of nuclear weapons and intercontinental ballistic missiles, I mean, the island continent probably has a really significant missile defense system now.
Yeah.
If not a space-based, right, system of some sort now. And
at least they're not deluded in what the rest of the world thinks of.
Yeah, that, and see, and I was making that point. It's much more difficult for them, you know, to have illusions about, you know, the rest of the planet. You know, they made that point. Remember that it's very, very,
sharp divide.
Yeah, very sharp divide between them and everyone else. So, all right. So anyway, so that's interesting to see. You know, the technology seems to be pretty lined up with us, you know, you're getting a little bit of a hint here about what their latitude is, or you know, or what they. The tilt of the axes of that world or whatnot. I mean, you know, you can kind of speculate on, you know, if they've got pretty moderate climate for, you know, eight tenths of the year,
yeah.
Right?
Strange.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Right. So.
So would these kind of improvements you were just talking about normally come out of the prince's side of the equation or out of Adam and Eve's side of the equation?
Which
all these material, you know. Cars, train, you know, different.
Well, the basic technology things, that's Adam and Eve, right? Because they're fostering, you know, they're, I mean, you have, right, I mean, you have that stuff, you know, being started by the princes and staff, but right, the fundamental scientific and technological advancement is fostered by the Adam and Eve on a world.
From the
Well, I mean, the genetic, you need the genetics, but, I mean, but they're literally... That's part of their mission to foster the, you know, that's more of the material or physical development on the world. You know, you have all the physical stuff with Adam and Eve, the intellectual stuff with the magisterial son, the spiritual stuff with the bestowal son, right? It's in, you know, three sets
the
like that.
The staff had those different schools that were somewhere.
They're just starting that up.
But they work together, I guess.
Yeah, right. They would work together. But Adam and Eve are taking the lead on those scientific and technological things, as they point out in the dispensational epics. By the end of the Adam and Eve dispensation, you've gone from, you know, a relatively primitive state to, full dominance of the physical, forces of the world. In other words, ultimatonic level physics and right. So it would normally be. See, and again, so because they didn't have an Adam and Eve, it took them just as long to get cars as it took us to get cars.
Big hint there that their travel is kind of subject to climate, so can't be that, not so fancy that they can just go wherever they want to go.
Yeah, but of course that was back all those decades ago. Yeah, these days, right?
You should be able to fly around.
Yeah.
Trains came over before cars.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But anyway, right? You get the basic idea. They obviously must be similar, and so it's that statement. That's why I always say it's like, you got to wonder what's happened, since they wrote this, on that neighboring planet. I'm sure they have a lot more difficult security issues now than they did back then. Okay, let's keep going.
200 years ago, the profit motive was wholly dominant in industry, but today it is being rapidly displaced by other and higher driving forces. Competition is keen on this continent, but much of it has been transferred from industry to play, skill, scientific achievement, and intellectual attainment. It is most active in social service and governmental loyalty. Among this people, public service is rapidly becoming the chief goal of ambition. The richest man on the continent works 6 hours a day in the office of his machine shop and then hastens over to the local branch of the School of Statesmanship, where he seeks to qualify for public service.
Well, see, I told you it was coming up, right? I mean, you can't work, all day long and then drop dead and go to sleep because you got to spend a big chunk of time in statesmanship school.
The richest man works in a machine shop.
Yeah,
so it's a whole different.
Yeah, well, remember how he was educated. We read the education. The first thing that they do, right, is get some practical thing. And, he's applying that trade that he learned, from K through 12, right?
Excuse me, what is that? That's right. He has an Amazon now, right?
Yes.
He doesn't work in a machine shop.
Harry just goes right down the escalator.
But before we get too far afield, okay, now notice, we just saw in the preceding paragraph that technologically, it seems very closely synced up with us. But whoa, you go to the next one. 200 years ago, the profit motive was wholly dominant in industry, but today, it is being rapidly displaced by other and higher driving forces. So wow, they're like at least 200 years ahead of us there. You go, well, why? Well, remember how much more philosophic they are. That's a catalyst. That's an accelerant. In getting that higher recognition going in individuals' minds. Right? Our paucity of significant personal living philosophies in the upper domain of our minds is why we are still so lagging behind in this area, unable to think of a motivation transcendent of the immediate material issues.
Yeah.
Right?
When I was young, the profit motive was a very powerful motivating force for me.
Yeah.
But even a modicum of success, which wasn't really very much, satisfied that to such an extent that I had to actively come up with other ways to motivate myself other than just profit.
Because you start losing money, you get motivated.
Well, there was always that.
I can always drop back to the basics then.
You were talking about the profit motive several papers ago.
Yeah.
You were also talking about the fact that, you just can't just get rid of it right away.
Right.
There's a whole You know, right now it's, it has a purpose.
Yeah, and you notice that they're in indicating that evolution. 200 years ago, it was wholly dominant. Right now, it's just partially now. Right, and again, the very fact that they didn't say totally, they said wholly. Right? Profit motive was a complete lifestyle solution.
Yeah.
See?
So what does the guy do? Then the machine shop guy, he goes and he serves his country, so to speak. In a form.
Yeah, and of course,
most people don't want to serve their country.
Yeah.
Because number one, the press is all over them whenever they pick their nose or whatever. But I'm just saying, it's like, this seems like the people that are the wisest and the most fit to do it don't even want to touch it.
Right, and that speaks to how they didn't just change one area, right? They had to change their whole system because it's all interconnected. And a big portion, like they just mentioned at the beginning of this section, is not just this, you know, the literalness of how they set up the system. The individuals had to challenge themselves more than they were before in order for this better system to work. And it's like I always point out about, again, what makes this country different than other countries. This country is predicated on the assumption that the individuals are going to challenge themselves to a higher level of responsibility than what happens naturally. If we don't challenge ourselves to go above what's natural, the way we set up the system is fundamentally flawed, doomed to failure. It's predicated on the assumption, right, that you have individuals, for instance, for whom something is self-evident. Right, that's a human, not a fancy animal. Nothing is self-evident to a fancy animal. It's all six of one, half a dozen another to a fancy animal. There's no way to break the quandary.
But go back to what you say many times, the whole thing about all men are created equal, which is part of that whole thing, too, is misinterpreted in a way.
Right, instead of created equal, right? That we're materially and mentally equal. And, you know, it's like, no, you know, you're created by a spiritual father. You're spiritually equal. Right? You're not materially created, you know, by a material father.
Right. If we were all equal, we would just be machines or clones.
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, that a very important thing that they get to, you know, that is, you know, what would it be like if we'd begun to move away from profit motive 200 years ago? Well, we'd have this higher consciousness as an innate part of each of us, you know, that would have this kind of an expression where you've transferred from industry to play, skill, scientific achievement, and intellectual attainment, right? You know, and where is it most active? In social service and governmental loyalty. Can you imagine, right, if we looked around our society and the most focused ambition was to better and better governmental loyalty, that those were the shining examples in our society. We look to, you know, people in government when we want to see the dregs of human consciousness.
Yeah.
Right? It's like we want to find the people that are the most self-absorbed, greedy, and, you know,
the sleaziest.
All right, the sleaziest ones amongst us, right? Again, that just, why haven't we, you know, we go, well, we should leave profit motive behind. You know, you can't just, right? If you find a people who are now focused on, right, of higher levels of philosophic consciousness, you won't have to say we now need to leave profit motive behind. You will have naturally left profit motive behind. We can't have illusions about this. Right? There's a lot of things that we're trying to, technical things about like the light, age of light and life that we're trying to implement by fiat. Right? It's change without growth. Right? It's not potential goodness. It's potential evil. You know, as the relatives say. So, we all know when they take governmental loyalty this seriously, if someone's disloyal, probably a harsh penalty, isn't it? Right, you know what it is. We're coming up to that section. Death. Right. Just think about if we were like them, if you subjected all the people in our bureaucracies to their standard, right? Every single one person in our bureaucracies would be executed. And we're seeing that more and more. The more we draw back the curtain and look at just how diseased our bureaucracies are, just how insanely disloyal they are, how they don't even remotely see themselves as public servants. Right? It's all just the spoils system and stuff. Yeah, I mean, we've got very systemic problems with human quality. Yeah, and no amount of laws or regulations is going to make anyone choose to supply better, more favorable conditions and be grown to a higher human quality of mind.
Yeah, there's no problem with the spoil system if that's evolving.
Yeah.
But if it's a spoil system that we've slipped back into, that's a problem.
Right, because again, that's why all these things that, you say, well, it's really, really unfortunate that we're back to a former thing. Yeah, but it's worse than it was before. Because now there's more spiritual energy in that old form than there was back when it was the form of the day. Right? Yeah, there's a gasoline on all those old forms that wasn't there before. They're more destructive than they ever were before. Because they're more ideological, Or isn't they are ideological when they weren't at all before. Sure. They were just sort of unconscious, natural process. Everyone was just doing that.
That was innocent, right? Organic.
Now you're
willful.
Now it's this willful choice of that ideology, and you amp it up with all of your false idealism. And it's one of the most troubling signs, like we saw when we talked about some of those aspects of government before in the preceding papers. The fact that there's such rot in our governmental institutions, it's a very troubling sign. Among this people, public service is rapidly becoming the chief goal of ambition. And like you were saying, there are occasional individuals that would love to make it their chief goal of ambition, but they know if they try, it's just you're throwing yourself into a meat grinder of just debased, debauchery of humanity, right? We end up, having to try to figure out how something can endure such an assault, in such a disrupted system, such a system so devoid of human quality. I mean, see, we've got to get back to better citizens if we're going to have a better government again, right? We can't have animals for citizens. We need humans. And how do you differentiate a human from the animal origin creature? What's the nucleus of that differentiation? God. Right? If you separate God and man, you don't have men anymore. You have animals.
Yeah.
Right?
It's the zookeeper.
And all those forces in our society that are trying to separate God and man, especially under the name of, the illusion of that it's positive, that it's separation of church and state. And so we all nod our heads, oh, yeah, we don't want church and state to get, combined together. Right? We are so past anything that has to do with church and state. Right? There isn't any church and state issues in play. It's all God and man in this country. Sure, other countries are still dealing with church and state. We're beyond that. Right? There aren't any church-state issues. It's all God and man. You know, if you want everyone in government to never say the word God, well, that's the end of the United States. All right? It's predicated on God knowing individuals. That's the Declaration of Independence, endowed by our Creator. Right? That's a God-knowing human. Yeah. So, right, we need to, you know, our civilization has to be predicated on faith and family. Like the Revelation is clearly saying, it can't be predicated on government and bureaucracy in that order, right? Bureaucracy is not a replacement for family. Right? And government is not a replacement for faith. But many believe so. Many, many, many believe so. Yeah. Advocate for it daily.
Just throw a village at it.
We have to recognize this corruption.
Did they just come out and say that they've moved on to the pursuit of knowledge and wisdom? I don't know if they actually identify it.
Well, see, I mean, that's an interesting thing to think about. See, you know, funny you said that, because I was actually going to bring that up. You know, when they say 200 years ago, okay, about the profit motive beginning to move away. Oh, well, what does that mean about going from the material comfort era to the quest for knowledge and wisdom? And see, so if you think about it, yeah, I mean, obviously not the whole planet is in the quest for knowledge and wisdom, but this island continent, right, the people there, see, there's a lot of the quest. Right, I mean, that's basic, kind of what they said here, the chief pursuit. Right, see, that's why they can do some of these things, because they embody the quest for knowledge and wisdom rather than the material comfort era. Right, he doesn't spend the other three quarters of his day seeking material comfort, that richest man. See?
Time to head to the bar.
Right? Time to go luxuriate on my yacht, right, or whatever. Yeah. Okay.
Labor is becoming more honorable on this continent, and all able-bodied citizens over 18 work either at home and on farms, at some recognized industry, on the public works where the temporarily unemployed are absorbed, or else in the core of compulsory labors in the mines.
Yeah, remember back when we read the progressive civilization section and item number 6 in the list was compulsory employment? You know how we talked about that a lot? See, they recognize that. And it requires, beginning to get top down on material labor. So you recognize you know, the truth of it more, if you will, or you know, even the value of it, you could say it that way, instead of just the material fact of it. See, it's becoming more honorable on this continent because they're seeing things in a bigger context. You know, and so they don't fool around, you know, and just so they don't make suggestions, you know, that everyone kind of go with that recognition. They establish it. All able-bodied citizens, period, have to work. You know, again, that's like I said. I mean, this is one of the difficult things that we're going to have, because we're so much more, you know, spiritually animated than these people. You know, and racing off, you know, on that tangent, it's getting harder and harder for us to submit to such definitive thoughts like that. We want to fuzz everything out. Let's see. At some recognized industry. Notice someone can't just say, well, this is an industry. It's like, no, that's not a recognized industry. There's an executive, legislative, and judicial branch. It's all very precise.
I'm an industry.
I just made up a new industry. No. You see, they've got something for temporarily unemployed, right? I mean, they put them to gainful use. And then you go, whoa, compulsory laborers in the mines. And see, again. There's an example. It's not like we need to institute compulsory labor in mines, right, in order to conform to the fifth epical revelation. That's way too simplistic. But you just notice that they in their system, they're not afraid to have something that definitive. They see some need for it in their in the equity of their system.
Yeah.
Okay.
Something tells me they don't. Disability insurance. There is not a growth industry.
Yeah. That, you know that a fifth of their able-bodied citizens aren't on disability. Like ours. One fifth. I know. Isn't that a danger sign there?
Well, you think they set the bar at
able-bodied. Yeah. It's like, can you move? You're able-bodied.
Yeah. Okay. Here you go.
I can't move either of my legs or my left arm. You can move your right arm, though, can't you?
Yeah.
Okay, you're able-bodied. You're going to be doing this with your right arm.
These people are also beginning to foster a new form of social disgust. Disgust for both idleness and unearned wealth. Slowly but certainly, they are conquering their machines. Once they too struggled for political liberty and subsequently for economic freedom, now they are entering upon the enjoyment of both, while in addition they are beginning to appreciate their well-earned leisure, which can be devoted to increased self-realization.
Does that not sound like going for the material comfort era to the quest for knowledge and wisdom, see? You can see that material comfort era with the economic freedom.
Yeah.
Right, but see, they're moving beyond.
They were once like that.
Yep. In every world, you go through those developmental epochs. You notice that they're pointing out that some of the way this is all held together and works is peer pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's an important part of a system. Right, you know, they have a new sublime disgust for idleness. You know, wow, we definitely don't have that anymore. And there's that, that moving away from the profit motive, right, and getting things very boiled down, like we saw with the incomes, modes, all of those unearned wealth modes, we're proliferating these days. No. You can't just sit there and rest on the laurels of compound interest or something.
And call it industry.
And call yourself industrious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do they? That's a novel idea. They're fostering a new form. It's not just happening.
Mm-hmm.
They're intentionally fostering it.
Yep.
It doesn't quite seem like political correctness. but it might still have the same genesis of making them do that.
You can see how much they are definitively a people of the future. They see themselves as a people of the future, not a people of the present. Right? And so they're all in full dynamic activation, of a people moving forward. And the more they are that, the more idleness is just an abomination relative to that dynamic consciousness. And again, that dynamic consciousness is natural. Your consciousness in the lower domain is naturally kind of static. The consciousness in the upper domain is innately dynamic, right? Because you're synchronizing with the cosmos, the universe of motion, right? As opposed to the lower domain, you know, the material mind, you know, which appears to be synchronized with that static, you know, billiard ball model reality, right? The universe of matter. A lot of this, they don't have to decide, you know, or choose. It's natural and just how dynamic they are inside, and that just pours out in their society. Our God is a living God, right? See, they've struck step with a living God, not some dead, basically idol, you know, in a God cult.
They don't just tolerate idleness; they're kind of allergic to it, uncomfortable with it.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so that's the basics of industry, but you know, you're thinking, well, you know, like when they said all able-bodied citizens over 18 work, you know, it's like, well, eventually you're way over 18. Then what happens? Yeah, see, that's next year, old age.
Section 6, old age insurance. This nation is making a determined effort to replace the self-respect destroying type of charity by dignified government insurance guarantees of security in old age. This nation provides every child an education and every man a job. Therefore, can it successfully carry out such an insurance scheme for the protection of the infirm and aged?
Okay, see, it all is sounding, it's like, oh yeah, look at that bottom line they throw in there, right? Therefore, right, there's some causal logic here, right? So if we try to, you know, have some insurance scheme, but, right, if you don't have, you know, provides every child an education and every man a job, you know, again, you know, go back to those papers we just went through where you had, not only like compulsory education there in Section 4, but, you know, remember it was there in Section 2 in the Development of State paper also, you know, one of the first ones was the freedom of the mind. Unless the free people are educated, taught to think intelligently and plan wisely, freedom usually does more harm than good. All right, see, they know these things. They know these predicates. And if you're going to have something like old age insurance, administered by the government, it has to be predicated on high quality citizens and highly productive citizens. Because obviously, if there's only going to be, you know, a very very tiny fraction of people in your society that are productive, you quickly have a problem, like all of our pension plans, right? That are pyramid schemes. Yeah, you know, where you know, it takes 200 active firefighters to pay the pension of one retired firefighter. Well, that's a problem because our little town doesn't have 200 firefighters, but it has lots of retired ones now.
Yeah.
yeah, how's that going to work? So, right, I mean, so they, yeah, those predicates, every child in education and every man a job, therefore. That's the biggie in that paragraph. But also, you know, that self-respect destroying type of charity, you know, that doesn't have to be literally, you know, you're sitting there with a tin cup, alms for the poor and wretched, you know. It doesn't have to be that kind of, you know, which is obviously self-respect destroying, you know, begging like that. But just anything that is basically that same fact masked in some way. You know, some system set up where we're fooling ourselves that it isn't just basically that self-respect destroying sort of setup where, you know, where you're getting handouts with no predicate. You know, we definitely started out, and remember, think about, you know, as they're giving us this, you know, we were putting forward our Social Security system. I believe, if I remember correctly, that was enacted in 1935. Yeah, so we were thinking along some of these lines, you know, back at the same time this revelation was coming out. You know, and we kind of had the idea, it's like, well, okay, you're going to work and a part of your income is going to go into your Social Security, you know, but eventually we erased the lines on the boxes and, you know, and your Social Security stuff just went into the general pool of a government, you know, abyss. And, right, you know, so we didn't maintain the philosophic integrity of this system. And so it's getting more and more problematic, not to mention turning it into more of a self-respect destroying type of charity. You know, it goes beyond just old age insurance now.
Mm-hmm. And
you can't live on it anyway. Yeah, you can't live on it. And of course, see, you know, that was another thing. I mean, it was never meant to be something that you lived on. Now we think of it as something that you're supposed to live on. You know, there's, I mean, if you want to set up a system to that we can live on, well, that should have been the initial plan. But that wasn't the initial plan. And yet we've all gotten into thinking that's the whole point of it. You know, it was supposed to just be a supplement thing. So, I mean, we've lost all the philosophical oversight of the whole system. You know, these people are not losing philosophic oversight on anything. They are focused. Right? And they're constantly getting more focused and improving it as they get more and more top down on their ideas. All right. It's very interesting to notice that they right up front they tried to disabuse us of the where we are when we hear government insurance guarantees. There's a lot of prerequisites to that being an integrous system to successfully carry out, as they say there. Right? And if you don't have that philosophic framework, it's you're kidding yourself if you think this is going to work.
An insurance scheme.
Yes, it will be scheme in the negative sense of using scheme, yes.
Among this people, all persons must retire from gainful pursuit at 65 unless they secure a permit from the state labor commissioner, which will entitle them to remain at work until the age of 70. This age limit does not apply to government servants or philosophers. The physically disabled or permanently crippled can be placed on the retired list at any age by court order countersigned by the pension commissioner of the regional government.
You know, the last thing, you know, like I pointed out, they occasionally, you know, give you that. It's like, well, what about, you know, the exception to the rule? You know, occasionally they point out, no, they've thought about that. And they have a system for that. But you notice it's all very carefully monitored. You know, you don't just get on this list because, yeah, I don't really feel like working anymore. You know, I wonder if I asked if they'd give it to you. And everyone in our country's going, yeah, all I had to do is just ask. They didn't make any check to see if I really was deserving of this benefit. Yeah, we all know how it's getting abused these days. So, do you have this whole bit of a court order countersigned? So you have both the executive and the judicial branch involved. But the hilarious thing in there is, yeah, yeah, we're exactly like this. If we had an exception to an age limit, it would be government servants and philosophers. Then you go, well, actually, we do have this thing about government people being there forever. But you know, the really funny thing is the philosophers, right? Of all the, it just shows you how much they're in the quest for knowledge and wisdom.
And do we have any philosophers?
No, we don't. Yeah, and of course, remember, that's the point I tried to make. We have, over the last 2,600 years, there's been people called philosophers, and there's still people that are called philosophers. But, you know, it's been marginally true, even at the best of times, over the last 2,600 years. And in the Endarkament now, it's very not true. I mean, again, if there had been any definitiveness to any philosopher in the past, you could look up the proper definition of the word faith in the dictionary. Right? It boils back down to that nucleus. What's the nucleus of your personal living philosophy? Your faith. It's not belief. You know, that, and that's always been, right, the problem with getting very far with genuine philosophy is we have all these boat anchors of false belief, of subjectivity, etc. All right, they're going to give us some details here about the system.
Pick up on when it comes to ceasing employment, mm-hmm. they have to kind of tell you to stop.
Yeah.
And entitlement is used next to continued employment.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Striking.
The funds for old age pensions are derived from four sources. One, one day's earnings each month are requisitioned by the federal government for this purpose, and in this country, everybody works.
Yeah, just quick little comments there. I mean, yeah, you know, to say, reemphasize, and in this country, everybody works. Right? Right. Right. The only way that they would, you know, you can do something like that is if it has that generality.
Two, bequests. Many wealthy citizens leave funds for this purpose.
Yeah, and, you know, we often have this come up, you know, when some really wealthy person says that wealthy people should pay more taxes. Like, you can always write a check to the government, dude. Nothing, no one's stopping you. All right. Right. Many wealthy people leave funds for this purpose, right? I mean, you know, we should, you know, we should just sort of foster that. We should, you know, maybe call their bluff, but push that. It's like, okay, if you think you have the means, let's set up a system. Okay, you're not, I'm pretty sure you don't want to just throw it down the hole of the general fund. You know, most of the money we give to the government, they just throw it out the window. Right, so we could set up a system where, you know, that money, those higher taxes they want to pay, they can cut a check and it'll go to something and it'll be productive. You know, maybe we could start to tweak some of this stuff a little bit without having to change everything because we don't have the philosophic integrity to do that right now.
Yeah, there's some low-hanging things.
There's some low-hanging things we might be able to tweak a little bit.
Number three, the earnings of compulsory labor in the state mines. After the conscript workers support themselves and set aside their own retirement contributions, all excess profits on their labor are turned over to this pension fund.
Again, it's kind of startling, the degree of micromanagement of these individuals. You know, it's not just compulsory labor, but it's like, okay, you know, you need this much, you know, for, you know, room and board, and this much for retirement, and again, we take the rest. So they're being very micromanaged, these people.
They obviously don't have any mining companies.
Yeah, I mean,
take the rest.
Yeah, yeah. We haven't, you know, totally gotten to the whole natural resources thing here on this planet.
Four, the income from natural resources. All natural wealth on the continent is held as a social trust by the federal government, and the income therefrom is utilized for social purposes, such as disease prevention, education of geniuses, and expenses of especially promising individuals in the statesmanship schools. One half of the income from natural resources goes to the old age pension fund.
Yeah, people who are familiar with this paper know that they have this you know very different approach to natural resources than you know what our evolution has produced. You know, that would be a great example of, you know, you don't want to just institute a fiat government takeover of all, you know, mineral rights, you know, say, or water rights. But, you know, in the way they evolved, you know, they've found that as a means, you know, to leverage off of that and have that as a common element. And so, you know, if you obviously, when you have a common element like that, it's used in the general mode, right? It's for the good of everyone. Okay. You'll see as we go forward, you know, they're going to talk about how, you know, there are ways that you can have, you know, a bit of a, you know, what we would call a socialized aspect, and we have naturally. I mean, you know, we have national parks, right? You know, that aren't private property. You know, we've introduced some things like that, and so, you know, we don't want to think in dichotomies. It's like it's either socialism or capitalism. You know, technically, it shouldn't be either-ism. This is the biggie for them, is that all the natural resources are, as they say, they're held as a social trust by the federal government. Okay.
Although state and regional actuarial foundations supply many forms of protective insurance, old age pensions are solely administrated by the federal government through the 10 regional departments.
Okay, it should be obvious why they threw that in there, you know, lest you think that this is the only insurance they have. Like, no, they have a whole complicated private insurance system and stuff, too. But you see another element here that you start to get the gears turning about why they have those sub-federal, that you know, those sets of 10 states rather than just states and then the federal government. They have that additional layer in there. As you begin to see them applying that here some, that, you know, it's helping to keep the federal elements of their system from getting too hyper-concentrated. You know, and it's interesting, you know, we've gotten so extreme now with Washington, D.C., that you're actually starting to, you know, it's a stark enough situation where you're actually starting to hear some people on both sides of our political divide, you know, thinking about, well, you know, maybe we ought to think about distributing the federal elements. Now, if we're going to have all these federal things, couldn't we at least distribute them and maybe, you know, and take maybe a whole department out of Washington, D.C., right, and put it in a different state, you know, put it in Montana or something, or Ohio, or maybe break it up into subunits, and, you know, maybe there's 10 parts of that department, and it's in 10 different states, to try to, you know, because we're getting this ever more, you know, condensed and kind of imploding phenomenon there, where all the wealth in the country is concentrated in Washington, D.C. So you can see they figured that out in advance, right? That they needed to avoid that tendency that we're discovering experientially. And so they saw to it that a lot of that stuff was distributed to begin with, and just preventing it from getting so, ridiculously bloated and centralized. And obviously, it keeps it so that it doesn't become isolated. A lot of those bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., have never been anywhere in the universe except, between their apartment and their office. That's their entire universe. They have no clue of what it's like in Wyoming. There's a lot to be done, to think about there, about how we could, in a way do kind of like what they did there, even if we didn't make it so official and whatnot. Well, it's hot and humid in D.C. And it used to be a swamp. literally a swamp. Now it's metaphorically a swamp. So anyway, I wanted to point that out. You'll see that more as we go forward. It gets you kind of thinking about the why of those 10 regional things. All right?
These government funds have long been honestly administered. Next to treason and murder, the heaviest penalties meted out by the courts are attached to betrayal of public trust. Social and politically disloyalty are now looked upon as being the most heinous. Of all crimes.
Yeah, the most heinous of all crimes. Right. Well, and, of course, what is it? You know what the penalty is for betrayal of public trust. Death. Yes. These government funds have long been honestly administered. See, again, right? We can only imagine something being honestly administered now. So again, it's inherent. Nothing can be honestly administered when you're still basically just swimming in the material comfort era for your own self-gratification. You have to be pushing the quest for knowledge and wisdom. There has to be that integrity in the individuals that then is socialized out into the system, right? Where wisdom is your foundation rather than matter. The cosmos is your foundation rather than matter. And all knowledge is predicated top down upon that transcendent wisdom. If you have citizens, if you have cosmic citizens first, then you can have citizens that administer governmental funds honestly. There's no other way. You can't somehow pass laws or regulations. I mean, the only people who obey laws are law-abiding citizens. We're hopeless at figuring that out. We're constantly thinking that we can somehow control the behavior of non-law-abiding citizens with laws. I mean, it's just so hopelessly illogical. And yet you hear it every single day. We see some non-law-abiding person do something, and we go, well, we need to pass a law so that they won't do that anymore. They're not a law-abiding citizen. It doesn't matter what laws you pass. Right? I think if we pass enough stringent laws, they won't be able to wiggle out of it. Yeah, well, you could make it a totalitarian police state. It's just ridiculous the way we think. We have no philosophic quality to our thinking. And remember that if we're bemoaning how we have more and more individuals that aren't law-abiding, that means they aren't what? They aren't first, just, Right? Just is law, honest and law-abiding. Right? They aren't first just. And so when you say, well, we have this very unfair system. Well, of course you do. Because you don't have individuals who are first just.
You won't get the fairness.
You won't get the fairness if you aren't first just. Well, if you got a whole bunch of people that think, well, laws are for those other people. I mean, you can't even get to fairness, let alone that thing that you pine for with your spiritual consciousness at the top of the whole hierarchy, love. Right. There is no real love if there isn't first just, next fair, then patient, right, then kind, then merciful, and then and only then, love. When they make some of these statements and it seems so not where we are, do what I just did. So you go back, figure out, what's the physics? Why is it like that? Why do you hear the word security in social discourse more today than you did 50 years ago? Right. I mean, the word security...
The age of security.
You're right. I mean, if you go back to the security age, ta-da, the word security is suddenly needs to be used more again. Right. That's proof that you're falling back into the security age. Right? You don't have the security innately built into the system where you don't have to be talking about it every other day. Yeah.
Well, and it's easy for us to sit here, and contemplate and reflect on what you're saying, because we've read this revelation and we have a really much greater understanding of what's really going on. Mm-hmm. And the whole aspect of who we are spiritually and brothers and sisters and of the universe and our career and so on and so forth and our relationship with God and and the mother and so on and so forth. But whereas most people don't have that at all. And they're kind of caught up in old-time religion, mm-hmm. which doesn't really satisfy their philosophical thinking about it. And so they say, oh, this can't be right. They throw that out. So it's probably only their part of God within them and their souls that are keeping them together to some degree.
Right.
So to me, as you were saying about the revelation being in your lap, mm-hmm. we got to get it out of your lap, or at least some of the important things out of your lap, and figure out a way to be able to get people to where they have a much broader perspective of who they are and why they're here,
mm-hmm.
which gives them a more understanding to be able to have that, whether it's philosophical or educational outlook on life.
Yeah, and again, I would...
You're sparing right now.
And I would suggest that we start with the same model that was supposed to spread the fourth epical revelation. Right? We don't spread the fifth fundamentally by handing out the book any more than you spread the fourth by handing out some book. A book that Jesus didn't write. Well, why didn't he write it? Because the whole point was not to hand out a book or a pamphlet, that says the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man, right? He didn't say hand out these postcards with those words on it, right? He said he challenged them to incorporate his faith into them and then walk out into the world with that faith nucleus and just let what happens naturally when you lead a life predicated on a genuine faith nucleus. Okay, what's the challenge with the fifth? You don't go out with just the faith nucleus. You go out with the nucleus plus the sphere of truth around that faith nucleus. A much greater challenge. I mean, in the same way that Jesus was encouraging them to go out with that faith nucleus and the spiritual gravity would draw others to strike step with such a life, right. Even more spiritual gravity when you have a more holy spiritual nature around that spirit nucleus. Right? All the more spiritual gravity. I mean, it's the only fundamental way to do it. I mean, we're not going to somehow pass a law that everyone has to read and believe the Urantia book. You know, it solves this problem. We've got to embody it, the truth within our minds, and become, spiritually fragrant. Only now, much more so than merely, like the fourth epic of Revelation, but in a very holistic way. You'll just bring a big picture to any interaction with someone that they will find attractive, literally, right? They'll literally be drawn to the thoughts that exist in that superior framework, right? You know, like you were saying, I mean, there's so many people reject religions. They see the philosophic framework then in the so-called philosophic framework and find it totally wanting. You know, it's just a bunch of primitive beliefs and stuff. It's the ghost cult. You know, it's just replacing the word ghost by God. And, you know, it's not, there's no spiritual drawing power there. And so the churches are emptying. That's the fundamental way. You know, it just starts with you becoming a cosmic citizen. Oh, and by the way, you happen to be a citizen of the United States. Your cosmic citizenship is going to redound to your U.S. citizenship, just the way you interact with other citizens. And slowly there will be an evolution of the system, and things will get better. But nothing is going to be improved from the outside. Right?
This came from the outside, so this has got to help.
Well, the words came from the outside, yeah, but not the truth.
The people who wrote it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. You know, remember, I always point out that's the big challenge. I have no truth in my lap. I have words.
Well, they can represent truth to you or help you come up with truth. I mean, let's face it, it's a pretty good guide.
Right. But remember,
some truth in it.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's the whole point. Let's go.
Make favorable conditions.
All right. What does it say in the Jesus Papers about this issue? All right. I mean, if I go there, I see truth cannot be defined with words, only by living. It's a book full of words.
It's defined, but what about experienced?
The revelator had truth in his mind, and he downstepped it to words, and it died. Right? Words are dead. I have to reflect on these words and follow back up and find the same truth that the revelator was synchronized with. Right? I can only live it, right? In that remember we were talking about that fundamentally living the main. Remember how a lot of places in the book they say the problem is there's so few persons that are really living. Okay, not just living, not just that interplay between your material feeling mind and the world. That's living. What do they mean by really living? Right, that's the upper domain where there's truth. Right? There's no truth in the lower domain. The words, when I read these words, those words are in the lower domain.
You wouldn't have even gotten to where you are today, even being able to sit here and say that, if you had had.
Of course.
It
has everything to do. There's nothing about me naturally that can speak like I'm speaking right now. I'm wholly dependent on the fifth epic of Revelation, for being able to understand things like I do, but it's only because I didn't just read the words.
Well, the first time you did,
right?
And if they hadn't said anything, you probably wouldn't have read.
Of course, right? But again, that's the whole point. It's a process. You start with just the words, and you're trying to get from the fact of the words eventually to truth. You're not satisfied with just believing the words.
No, I agree with you, but my experience.
That's what you're trying to do.
First started reading the Urantia book as a whole bunch of people who live in this town. All these people who, when they first started reading it, changed almost overnight. Their whole vibe of who they were, why they were here, what life was about, so on and so forth, began to take on a whole new meaning for them. Now, granted, they've all begun to evolve and so on and so forth, but just to even get people starting, to me, is really, you know, critical.
Yeah.
And I agree with you, it's not meant necessarily for everybody. Yeah. But...
but remember, you know what? You know the remember the question I was answering. You know, we got to wrap it up here. But the question I was answering is not how, not so much how we kind of get people started. Maybe you do that by handing out the book. Okay, but
not just handing out the book.
But I was trying to get that point. You know, if you want to really have this book go beyond a few and begin to have social consequence, not just individual consequence, which is what you attested to, a bunch of people changed as individuals, right? But we haven't seen a social consequence yet, and that see that requires going beyond, you know, to taking it to that next level where you, in the same way that so many of Jesus' disciples didn't go out with his faith, they went out with a some Jewish culture and stuff, right? And you know, it had limited impact and no impact in a lot of areas because of that. Again, if you wanted to go beyond, you know, a few individuals and become a societal transforming influence, it has to be a living phenomenon in someone so that it pours out naturally. You know, it fundamentally changes society.
It's the shampoo thing. You know, or isn't it the Head and Shoulders thing, you know, or where the gal at the other table wants what she's
got? you have to be something where people stop it, you know, they pull back on their reins and go, what is going on with Katie? I mean, Katie always introduces a very new, original way of thinking about this situation. Where's that coming from? I find that very compelling, very attractive. I want to know how that is. Right? We need to become those kinds of individuals where we can point out something in a situation that no one else is. Right? To have that insight into a situation that no one else has. Okay, we could go on and on with that, but all right. So we'll just keep going. This next section, we've kind of hinted at this quite a bit. This section on taxation gets into this whole issue of how they fund their government, and hence how we should maybe rethink how we fund our government. Very important issue. All right, let's take a moment, everyone.